Our final presenter today is David Lebschwitz. He's the Associate Director of the Center for the Study of the States at the Rockefeller Institute of Government in Albany, New York. This is a nationally recognized organization that produces practical, independent research about state and local programs and finances in the 50 states. He's a co-author of a book, State Tax Relief for the Poor, and several articles about state government finance. Prior to joining the center, he worked for 4.5 years with New York state government, first with the Division of Budget, then with Environmental Facilities Corporation, and he spent 10 years in Washington, D.C., working for the U.S. Treasury, the Justice Department, and various private trade associations. So join me in welcoming David Lebschwitz.
Good morning. I have a sort of hard acts to follow, and I know when people hear about tax strategies early in the morning or in the middle of the morning, their eyes start to glaze over. So I hopefully will make this interesting. I will try not to use much jargon. And if I do, Karen will kick me. In any event, I have distributed for you all as part of a handout a copy of all the slides that I have. So you don't have to worry about taking all the facts and figures down, but there are slide pages here. First of all, before I get into my remarks, I just want to thank the School of Human Ecology at the University of Wisconsin and Karen and her staff for being so helpful in arranging my trip out here, and I'd like to thank the funders as well. The Center for the Study of the States and the Rockefeller Institute is the public policy research arm of the State University of New York, and we're located in Albany, where it was 75 degrees yesterday, and I came to Madison, which is, this is my first trip out here, and I expected a beautiful day to look at the Capitol and the neighborhood, and I emerged outside last night at about 7 o'clock, and it was raining sideways, and so I saw the Capitol from my hotel room, but hopefully I'll get to see more of it today. My book that I did last year, State Tax Relief for the Poor, which I have left down at the end of the table, but I'll hold it up later, is a source of the talk, although what I have tried to do is update this talk to reflect some newer things that have happened and also talk a little bit about how Wisconsin compares to the national average. So if I could have the next slide, please. Why are we interested in this? My colleagues on the panel have talked about healthcare strategies, they've talked about employment strategies, they've talked about setting the stage for the labor market. Why am I on this panel? Where do I fit? Well, one of the things that I want to talk about and the perspective I want to bring is how do tax strategies fit into this welfare reform web? Well, one of the things we want to talk about is what is the burden on the poor, the working poor, the people we are trying to help? All right, what impact do taxes have on them, and particularly state taxes? A 1996 study by the Citizens for Tax Justice in Washington showed that the poorest fifth, the poorest 20%, pay 12.5%, about an eighth of their income on state taxes, while those in the top 1%, the richest 1%, pay only about 8%. The reason for that is not the income tax. It's not the income tax. It's sales and property tax. They're very regressive. How does Wisconsin fit? All right. Wisconsin, unfortunately, does not stand so well even compared to the national average. The poorest 20% in Wisconsin pay 13.5%, and the top 1% in Wisconsin pay 6.5%. So in Wisconsin, there is even a larger gap in the regressivity of taxes on the poor and the working poor. Next slide, please. Another issue I want to talk about quickly, inflation. You don't think about inflation and taxes together. Unfortunately, what has happened is that the Tax Reform Act of 86, a lot of states adjusted their provisions to catch up with inflation, but many have not done anything since then. So that what has happened is the impact of taxes, bracket creep and so on and so forth, have had a larger impact on the poor. I want to say something later about what's happening during this legislative session across the country, because some of that is starting to change. Next slide, please. Finally, the reason we're all here, welfare reform. Wisconsin has been at the forefront nationally in a lot of the progressive things that it has been doing to try and get people working. And my colleagues have talked about some of the initiatives nationwide. The tax structure can be used as a way to help the poor and the working poor. And there's some things that are actually happening in this state and across the country that are doing that. But devolution, the welfare reform program, places new burdens on states to find ways of helping the poor. There's a windfall right now because of a hold harmless provision in TANF that basically gives you the amount of money that you got a few years ago, and the economy's doing well, so you're actually getting more money. But what's going to happen when there's a recession? All right? You're going to have to pay more, and you're only going to get a certain amount. So what can we do with the tax code to try and help the poor and the working poor in another way besides the TANF program? Next slide, please. When we look at tax provisions, one of the things that we do, and there's a big discussion in the book, and there's also in the briefing book that you've got a summary of that, what factors do we evaluate in looking at tax provisions and whether they're helpful to people? Not whether we should do them. That's not what I'm here to say, that you should do them. But if you choose to do them, how do you evaluate them? Some of those factors are, how expensive is it? State of Wisconsin's revising its education formula. Budget's very tight this year. The legislators in the room, I'm sure, are wrestling with that. So you can't have very expensive new programs. So that's one of the things you got to think about. Do the benefits go to the intended beneficiaries? Are they for the poor and the working poor? Are they for everybody? If they're for everybody, they're a lot more expensive. Do they have notch effects? Does that mean that if you make $20,000, you get a big grant? If you make $20,001, you drop off a cliff and have to pay a lot more in taxes? Is there a big step up, or is it sort of a smoother curve? And finally, are there undesirable incentives for cheating? Are you making people do lots of things that they wouldn't otherwise do? Next slide, please. The five major types of relief on the income tax, which, as I said before, is not the major problem, but it can be used to help people, are a personal exemption or credit, a targeted credit to the poor normally, the earned income tax credit, which I'm going to talk about more in a second, a standard deduction, and an income threshold. And that income threshold, which some of you may not be familiar with the term, it's basically below a certain income level, you don't pay any income tax. It is the in some states, it's called the no income tax threshold. The earned income tax credit is one of the best options because it's a work incentive. It's earned income. You've got to work to get it. It's well targeted within a range, and it's easy to administer. And the reason it's easy to administer is that states have a piggyback on a federal program that exists. Wisconsin is only one of seven states to have one. All right, and Wisconsin, again, has been sort of at the forefront of having an earned income tax credit. It's one of the most generous. It's refundable. That's very important. If you're a poor person and you get this credit and it's not refundable, you're not getting any money back, it's often not helpful because you don't have a big tax burden to start, a big income tax burden. So what you get with a refundable tax credit is you get an offset to the property tax that you may be paying either directly or through your rent and the sales tax that you pay. And finally, Wisconsin is the only state in the country that has an adjustment for family size. If you have a bigger family, you get a bigger benefit. That's very helpful because, as you know, those extra mouths to feed have a great impact on your ability to earn a living and get support. So Wisconsin should be commended for its program. The next slide, please. Next, the property tax relief. The circuit breaker, okay? A circuit breaker, state-financed, state emphasis, property tax credit, which benefits are phased out as income rises. You make above a certain level, you don't get this. It's a good property tax relief program because it's related to your ability to pay. All right. If everybody gets a credit, if everybody gets a property tax credit and you make $150,000 a year or $15,000, well, everybody's getting a benefit. Who is it really helping? Well, it's sort of helping everybody. And what you want to try and do in a program like this is focus on those that need it. Wisconsin, again, has this program. Wisconsin's is a fairly generous program for low and moderate income. It phases out in, I think it's $18,000 or $19,000. Many circuit breakers are just focused on the elderly because they say, they're on fixed incomes. But many elderly, as we all know, have wealth but not income. They have very expensive houses because they've lived there for a long time, so they may not have an inability to pay. A circuit breaker works better when it's targeted to income. And Wisconsin's is for homeowners and renters, and it's for all ages. It's not just the elderly. Next slide, please. Finally, there are a few other issues that I want to talk about in terms of tax relief, and then I want to just give you an update of what's going on nationally in terms of property tax relief or tax relief for the poor and property taxes and in other places. Sales tax relief. Very few states still have sales tax relief programs. An earned income tax credit actually is a better way to provide sales tax relief, because what happens in a sales tax relief program is that everybody benefits. So very few states have that. New Mexico is the only state in the country that has what they call a comprehensive tax relief program. That program has income tax, property tax, and it has a sales tax credit. Unfortunately, New Mexico has had a fairly rough time in the last few years with a recession. It's one of the places in the country that this economic tide hasn't lifted so well. So this program's been inadequately funded. It's a great program, but there's not enough money in it. Children and tax relief. As many of you know, being a single parent, you have a lot more in common with a couple who is a parent with a family structure than you do with a single individual. Yet most tax codes don't treat single parents like families. They treat them more like single individuals. Wisconsin does not have a provision to treat head of households differently. It's an important provision. It is helpful. Again, it makes raising children more affordable. Finally, the administration of programs. As many of you know, and we've talked about how programs, how welfare programs get administered, how helping people through home nursing visits, a lot of what is on paper and a lot of what actually happens differs. Tax provisions are wonderful if they're administered properly, if they're advertised, if they're explained. An earned income tax credit program that's targeted to the working poor should not be written so that you need a law degree to read the instructions. Wisconsin had a very powerful lesson in this a couple years ago when it decoupled its earned income tax credit from the federal program and created its own program. Unfortunately, trying to fill out those forms, and I got sent those forms by the Revenue Department, were so complicated that the number of people taking advantage of the program dropped off a cliff. Wisconsin has now recoupled its program with the federal program, and 90% of the people in Wisconsin who are eligible for the earned income tax credit take advantage of it. Powerful lesson. All right, and I've read several papers on it. There's a little section in the book about Wisconsin. It's a good object lesson for all of us who design programs. Make sure that the program works, because people can figure out how to fill paperwork out. Because the people that you're trying to get in these programs are not people that are by and large highly educated, and you need to think about that. Next slide, please. Finally, I'd just like to take a couple minutes and talk about what's happening this year in legislatures across the country, because that'll give you some indication of what's going on and what people, your colleagues in other state capitals, are doing right now. The next slide says newly enacted direct provisions. There are two states that have already enacted direct provisions helping the poor and the working poor. Your neighbors in Michigan have expanded their home heating tax credits. Based on my experience with the weather yesterday, you still need those credits, to low-income residents. Very important program, well-targeted to low-income. The folks in Virginia have enacted expanded a rental credit for the homeless, again, a population which tends not to be thought of so well, people without shelter. Next slide, please. There are several states that are following Wisconsin's lead and the other six states that have earned earned income tax credits. California, Michigan, New York, and Oregon are all considering either expanding or instituting an earned income tax credit. The information on Oregon I added since I did the handouts, they're talking about doing a 5% credit, and that's not on your slides for those of you who are interested in that. And then there are some other direct relief provisions that are happening. Now, next slide, please. But what's happening more so, and I think this reflects a political reality more than anything, is that there are lots of indirect provisions that are being enacted. And indirect provisions are provisions that help the poor, but they also help the middle class. And everybody knows the middle class is where the votes are. So that people are trying to paint a broader brush to sort of help, yes, it'll help the working poor, but it'll also help the middle class. Arizona, large property tax cut. Arkansas, which I will talk about more in a second, doubled its standard deduction, exempted people, and again, that threshold. Iowa, personal income tax credit. Next slide, please. Kentucky increased its exemption, our standard deduction, indexed it for inflation. Again, a helpful thing for lots of people. Personal exemption in Maine, Mississippi, Ohio. So you get the general sense that these tax changes are being done. Yes, they will help the poor and the working poor, but they're targeted mainly at the middle class. And I talked inflation before. A lot of this is being done because inflation has sort of eroded the brackets. They're very low, and the top rate starts at a very low amount of income. So a lot of states are starting to realize that, and they're increasing their exemptions and standard deductions. Next slide, please. There are also several states who are proposing these indirect provisions. If you look down the list, you've got Massachusetts, Missouri, Nebraska. Again, similar themes of increasing the amount of relief to the poor, working poor, and the middle class. All right, across the country, these things are happening all over. Karen sent me a bunch of proposals that are happening in your legislature this year. Again, I looked through those bills. I looked through the other bills that are proposed, similar themes, helping the poor, working poor, and the middle class. The expense is relatively modest in most of these, so that you see that sort of nationwide. However, the but is that not only are positive things happening, there are a couple of negative things happening as well. And if I could have the next slide. There are two categories of negative effects on the poor and the working poor. Enacted in Arkansas was an increase in the sales tax. All right, sales tax is a regressive tax. Arkansas cut its income tax, but it raised its sales tax from 4.5% to 4.625%. Doesn't sound like a lot, 0.125%, not a lot, but over the course of time it adds up, and the poor and the working poor are the least able to pay. California has proposed eliminating a renter's credit. Who rents? By and large, people with lower incomes. So a tax credit which helps people that rent, by and large, will help the poor and the working poor. A tax credit that helps people that own their homes, again, benefits mostly the middle class. And Texas wants to remove sales tax exemptions. Again, a regressive tax with an effect on the poor. I'd like to wrap up and just sort of walk through the next slide, please, with the conclusions of what we need to look for if we choose to use the tax code as a way to help poor people. Relieve the regressive taxes. I've talked about this a lot, the property and sales tax, as well as the income tax. Target the relief so it's limited in cost. The legislators in the audience should appreciate you've got to keep the cost down because you've got lots of other things you've got to fund. Make the credits refundable so that the poor and the working poor get some benefit from it, as the earned income tax credit is in Wisconsin. Make the relief broad-based, not just for seniors. Seniors are important, but you got to take into account everyone across the age spectrum. Large families should get more relief than smaller ones, again, like the Wisconsin tax credit. Single-parent families should get special attention because they have more in common with couples than singles. Index or update provisions regularly, and have the state finance the relief, not municipalities who are strapped. If you'd like a copy of the book, you can see me, leave me a card. I have a card and some articles that we've done on the back table, which you're welcome to take. Again, I appreciate your time and your attention, and I look forward to speaking with some of you after the formal presentation. Thank you very much.
Questions for Mr. Lebschwitz?
The question is, what was the burden on Wisconsin relative to the rest of the country? I actually have a copy of the CTJ study I can show you, but what I will do is recite the nationally the poorest 20%, the poorest fifth, pay 12.5% of their income in state taxes. The top 1% pay 7.9%. In Wisconsin, those figures are 13.7% for the poorest 20% and 6.4% for the top 1%.
The question is on the rent credit for the homeless. How does that work?
I am not an expert on what Virginia is doing, but I think what has happened in a lot of places is that if you haven't had an address for a certain period of time, you haven't been able to take advantage of a credit, and most of the rental credits are imputed. They credit you as if you had lived in a certain place for a year, and what it has basically said, this credit, as I understand it, is you do not have to have had a permanent address for an entire year, so that if you've moved around, you still get the credit.
The question is, there seems to be an apparent contradiction between the gap that was just presented between what the poor pay in taxes in Wisconsin versus those in higher income brackets and some of the excellent proposals that were recounted for that Wisconsin has to try to reduce taxes on the poor. Is that it? Okay.
It's a very good question, and I think actually as I was preparing for this talk, I was struck by it as well. I think there are a couple things that explain it. One is that the gap is not fully made up by the programs that you have. Wisconsin's income tax structure is fairly regressive, and the sales and property tax regressivity here is not overcome by the programs. I guess what I'm saying is the programs are a start, but they're not. Wisconsin is not a regressive state by any means. I mean, Washington State has the most regressive system, but the programs that Wisconsin has are a start, but they're not quite as generous as some other states, and it's mainly due to the income tax.
The question is there anything happening on the national level to make deductions for families more generous? Is that right?
There are two major proposals that are national proposals that both President Clinton and the Republican Congress have proposed. The $500 per child tax credit, if that were made refundable, which it currently is not proposed to be, that would be very helpful for families. The other proposal is the education credit that would be given for the first 2 years of college, and I think it's $10,000. Per student. Again, that would be helpful, but those provisions still would be for mainly middle class would take advantage of those, especially if the credit is not refundable.